Welcome to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. In each episode, Andrew interviews industry leaders. We'll hear their real-time opinions on today's market, their background and unique career highlights, and guidance for newcomers into the industry. You can find this show at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Now here's the host of Real Talk, Andrew Kirsch.
Episode 44 of Real Talk. Well, in this episode, we're going to dive in almost case study-like on the acquisition of the Aon Center, downtown LA office building, about 1.2 million square feet, built in the 70s. And my client, Carol Wood, which consisted of Adam Tischer, Adam Rubin, Daniel Abrams, and Andrew Shanfield, purchased the building at the end of 2023. And we have a great conversation about their perspective on office, their perspective on downtown LA, and really their unique aspect of amenitizing office in almost a hospitality manner. The one asset class where we are doing a lot of transactions these days is office, and the discount to owner's basis and loan amounts are significant. We closed a couple of them in Southern California and in Los Angeles. We closed one recently in downtown Denver and others. So it's definitely something to be on the lookout over the next several months as the distress is hitting the office industry. Anyway, enjoy my conversation with Adam Tischer and Adam Rubin about the Aon Center.
All right, welcome to another edition of Real Talk. I'm here with my good friends, the Adams, Adam Tischer, Adam Rubin, and we are in the conference room on the, what floor are we on? The 48th floor of the Aon Center at 707 Wilshire, downtown LA, a new acquisition of Carol Wood, Adam Tischer, Adam Rubin, L&R is involved.
Daniel Abrams.
And it's a real honor, guys, to be in this building in front of this beautiful, what do we call it? It's not a statue, a rendering.
A model.
A model.
Yeah. And this model was built before the building.
When was this building built?
1974?
I thought it was 78.
It was 1970s.
And who was the architect?
Luckman.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous tower. And so the reason why we're here, and normally, we do our podcasts remotely, but A, it's great to see you.
Likewise.
And B, you guys certainly worked, and I had the privilege of working on this transaction for, what was it, at least for me, 6-7 months, and maybe a lot longer for you guys. So just talk about, how did you first get the opportunity to purchase this building, the Aon Center?
First off, thank you for representing us during a monumental acquisition experience. And I look forward to working with you again. And you're a wonderful friend and attorney. So thanks for having us on.
No, thanks.
Back to your question. How did this acquisition come to us? Basically, we had been tracking the destabilized office market for years, through the pandemic and when it really started. And we saw values come down and a lot of fear. And we were talking internally and discussing, has it gone too far? Has the pendulum swung too far? And we were still going to the office, especially as we were coming out of the pandemic, and we realized that life was starting to return to normal. And we saw this property that was available. L&R, the company which Adam Rubin is president and CEO of, was a tenant of the building. So he actually chose this building, and we liked it. It had wonderful bones, epic views, and a helipad that actually has a private permit that predates the ban. So you're still able, this is one of, I think, only two plus or minus buildings in downtown LA that has a private permit. And it's one of the amenities we hope to bring to the tenants and to the building, among many. And we looked at it and we just said, I think this has the bones that we could really add a lot of value to it. And we decided we were going to pursue it.
So, you know, office in many circles is a four-letter word. You know, I just got back from a conference, a real estate conference, and very few, if any, capital providers out there are even allowed to allocate money to office, regardless of the price. It doesn't matter. Free, can't do it. So how did you, Adam, Ruben, I guess, have the conviction to go into an asset class that, and I guess I should start even, sure. Have you owned office previously?
Yes. So one of my many jobs is I'm the president of the L&R Group. So they had, when I first got involved with L&R, which was about 2016, they had, I think maybe 3 weeks after I started, they had purchased about 1 million square feet of office at LAX, which even then was a challenging office market. So I was very familiar. We had bought them from Jameson, and it was three garages and three office buildings at LAX.
On Century Boulevard?
On Century Boulevard, yeah. One of them was converted to a hotel, one of them was kept as office, and one of them is still not done, but eventually will be a hotel. So we quickly sold those office buildings off. I operated them for 6-8 months, and I thought, you know, there's something here, but this market, that LAX market was extremely difficult to navigate. So we had always, you know, been interested in office, but the pricing just never made any sense to us. So as it came to, you know, the pandemic, and then as you were talking about all the institutions and even for the most part lenders, well, wouldn't touch office, the fact that there was no capital available from equity or debt, we felt, Tisher Abrams and Schanfeld felt that created a huge overcorrection as far as where the prices of office buildings went. Because eventually, like everything, the capital market, the equity and debt markets will more than likely will come back to some new normal, but the absence of it as a product type, we just felt was not sustainable. And therefore pricing was depressed further than we felt it should be.
So you were a tenant, L&R companies, which, by the way, why don't, for our audience, to those that don't know L&R companies, do you want to describe, you know, what L&R companies is and the history behind L&R?
Sure. Yeah. So my grandfather and his partners were all Holocaust survivors. They came to the United States in 1959. They opened the first Joe's lot, I believe, on Broadway. We still own it today.
Wow.
They expanded over, you know, fairly modestly during the time that the original guys were around. You know, when I say modestly, carefully over a long period of time, they diversified a little bit into office buildings, but their core focus was buying and operating parking lots. And in the 90s, they got involved with airport parking, which they acquired Wally Park at LAX. There's now 19 of them, I think in 16 airports. And they also probably between the period of 1990, let's say, and 2000, and today they've diversified now into every asset class. So from industrial to retail to now a significant piece in office, and still the core business remains owning and operating parking lots, mm-hmm. which is a land banking, basically.
Sure. And so when you had an opportunity to bid on it, hadn't there been other groups that were in and out of contract to purchase the building? And so, Tisha, I know you're with, you know, Colliers, and so you have your finger on the pulse of the downtown market. So I guess walk us through sort of the last couple of years of this building and really just the downtown office market in general.
Sure. So we actually chased other properties together and we were outbid. And that was an early indicator that there might be a market forming for office, mm-hmm. in spite of lenders saying not even at zero, which is actually maybe an indicator that we had reached an extreme, right? That was actually kind of good news to us. Like, wow, how can it get worse than we won't lend at a $1 basis?
Yeah.
You know, that sounds irrational to us. So we had been chasing buildings in downtown LA for, I think, years. And when Aon appeared to us as an opportunity, interesting you bring that up. I believe it had been under contract twice before. It originally came out at a $220 million asking price. And I don't know the exact history because that those transactions before us are somewhat confidential and they didn't work out. So there's not much to know, but I had understood that it was in contract, fell out, then the price was reduced, then in contract, fell out. And, you know, not to be too lighthearted about it, but third time's a charm. We were the third group and we thought that maybe we're too soon, but you know, you can't time the exact bottom of a market. And if we're gonna execute on a business plan, this is a stunning building with great bones, and it was scary to close. And then in hindsight, even though it hasn't been that long since we've taken ownership, it now appears like maybe it was the bottom of the market and it now feels a little safer.
Why do you say that?
So we have been rapidly introducing amenities into the building, and Adam Rubin and Andrew Schanfeld own a number of restaurants in Beverly Hills, including Croft Alley on Brighton Way and in other locations, Pop's Bagels, Cha-Cha Matcha. And these are great amenities that they actually brought to what was formerly like an airport cafe with cold sandwiches and stuff. And we can get more into the amenities and what we're doing later. But to address your specific question, we've made rapid changes by improving the level of enjoyment and the experience of the tenants. So, and that seems to have resonated with existing tenants and with future prospective tenants. And so we've done many more renewals than we thought we were going to be able to do at this time in our ownership experience. And we've also experienced a dramatic amount of tenant demand, far exceeding our expectations. As a matter of fact, I believe we have more open interest and tours from tenants than we even have space available in the building. And that to me indicates that the fear may have been overblown and that the timing is right to actually buy more office buildings. So we're now looking to acquire more office buildings.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing to hear that. The conversation around downtown LA that I've been hearing, you know, well, let's take a step back. I worked in downtown LA from 2000 to about 2007 in the Library Tower at Lathan and Watkins. And, you know, the downtown revitalization at that time was in full effect. Staples Center was just built. I think the first grocery store, was it Ralph's, was just opening.
We did that deal, by the way.
Okay. You know, great bars, great nightlife. The Standard was open. Restaurants in the Arts District were, you couldn't get a reservation, right? It was truly the dream of you know, the government saying, let's have this downtown come back. And right. It was back. Survived the GFC, still strong, you know, throughout the teens. And then COVID hits and the decline of downtown LA was on a roller coaster. And you know, law firms were moving, investment banks were moving. And there was this exodus seemingly to Century City and maybe other parts of LA. People, the concern about homelessness, crime, safety, things of that nature. So tell my audience, you know, what you're seeing on the ground floor, no pun intended, of the Aon Center, and how you're seeing a different view of downtown LA compared to the chatter that people are talking about out in the city.
Sure. So in those cycles, and I've been down here maybe even longer, came down here to go to USC in 2000, and I have seen these cycles that you mentioned. And one of the interesting parts about all those cycles is that they actually include permanent additional improvements to the landscape. So for instance, the Staples Center, now crypto.com, is a permanent improvement. LA Live, $2.4 billion with a Ritz-Carlton Marriott, permanent improvement. The activation of the former Nomad Hotel, which since closed, but it got just rebranded and reflagged.
Yeah.
You've got the Standard Hotel, closed, rebranded, reflagged. It's now the Delphi Hotel. Mm-hmm. And they introduced a new design element that I like. It's called biophilic, and lots of plants and life. And it's actually, I think, an improvement from the Standard. And so you have billions and billions and billions of dollars of improvements, numerous, some of the best housing in downtown, some of the best housing in LA is actually in downtown LA. Brookfield built the Beaudry. I encourage you to tour it. It is 787 units. Absolutely stellar product. It's like walking into a Rosewood Hotel or Four Seasons, and views, and it's just amazing product. So you have excellent product, and that, while it cycles and it certainly dips and then goes up and dips and goes up, it's on an upward trajectory and trend. And these restaurants that have been opened are wonderful improvements. I mean, it costs millions of dollars to put in a kitchen, the city permitting experience, and lots of different investments have occurred. And when and if a restaurant fails, for instance, Plan Check in downtown LA is no longer Plan Check, but the millions of improvements allowed a second generation user to reopen it, and it's now a new experience, and it's still a better place in downtown. And so I believe we're trending upward. Also, the city, interestingly enough, has done a great job of addressing the homeless issue and crime. And so we, as downtown investors, and I lived down here for over 20 years, and we've seen this, the streets are more walkable, the restaurants are opening back up, the hotels are opening back up, and these are all just early indicators. And ultimately, with, you know, gas prices going up, et cetera, you have this, everything that was the reason downtown should come back and appeared to be a false start is still true. You have a walkable community, you have an interesting architecture that includes elements from the Roaring 20s, you know, Broadway, the historic theaters. A lot of these buildings are intermixed with trophy Class A towers like the Aon Center. And it's really a diverse experience. It's artistic. It's beautiful. There's people walking around. It's vibrant. And it's really coming back very quickly and exciting. And Adam, your company is based here. You know, I'd love to hear some of your thoughts as well. Or if you agree with those arguments.
No, I mean, I agree with all those statements.
By the way, I think Tischer should be
the spokesperson,
the president of the Chamber of Commerce or Business
the bid.
Improvement District
right.
Downtown. And Karen Bass needs to get you on this task force.
Right.
No, because I do think that, and I'm glad you're on this podcast, and I know you're doing other media. A lot of this is awareness and perception
for
becomes
sure.
reality. And when enough people have a perception that downtown is not safe, they're
right.
not going to come here, whether it's to live, office, or recreate. And seeing what you guys are on the ground floor, said that twice now,
right.
But seeing, being here every day and knowing, you know, what the true vibrancy of
right.
this area is, there needs to be more public outreach and informing of the public of how downtown is.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, as you know, you mentioned, you know, being on the ground, I think as a parking operator, we have a very interesting view, which, you know, nobody else really sees, whereas we see the traffic counts and the volumes in pretty much every district in downtown LA. And we also have the benefit of owning some multifamily. The multifamily in downtown is performing
very well,
extremely well, which sort of doesn't align with the, you know, the headlines that are coming out, that down to, you know, as you sort of mentioned. So we can see the reality on the ground, which is that there's a lot of movement. There's a lot of people living in the apartment buildings. There's huge demand to live in the apartment buildings. And this whole concept, downtown LA is really coming back and coming back, I think, what will be bigger than it did before. But it its decline was in a COVID period that I think people really exaggerated and grabbed onto. And if you walk, I mean, if, I would say to anyone, just come down here and see. It's not this horror show. I mean, there's great restaurants, as he said. There's, you walk to Crypto. The apartment buildings are probably the best in the city. I don't know that you can find.
Come enjoy some food at Croft.
Come enjoy some food at Croft Alley. Yeah. At Aeon.
All right, so we closed at the end of December, and it sounds like it's, what, 45 days by the time we record, you know, or publish this, about 60 days of ownership. And you already have this momentum, this positive momentum. And when people heard, oh, Kirsch, you were involved in the acquisition of Aeon Center, I assume the ownership group is going to convert to Resi.
Right.
I said, I don't think that's their plan. I think they are in it for the long haul for office. So to walk me through, like, how did you guys decide that the business plan would still be office when there are headwinds in office and not do the Resi conversion that so many people assumed you guys were going to do?
Right.
So on the Resi conversion part, as a risk analysis approach, we evaluated it thoroughly, and we had Gensler provide a report relative to the feasibility of this building. And it actually lays out very well for a conversion. And as you may or may not have heard, when we acquired the building, we immediately announced the hiring of the Colliers leasing team. And that's led by Matt Hine and Ian Gilbert. And honestly, that oversubscription of interest and the renewals that we've been doing, which Ian and Matt are at the helm of, have led to a continued confidence in pursuing and continuing with the office path. So it was never off the table. It was more like, hey, if office doesn't, if our thesis doesn't work, we'll revisit plan B. But based on the leasing team's success, we have renewed our confidence in that direction. Secondly, I'll let Adam talk about the amenities that we've been bringing to office and how that has really helped us, the reaction. So, for instance, we were having breakfast at the Croft Alley, which opened, he was able to open in 17 days, which is really unbelievable. And it's top quality food. I think between Bottega Louie and Croft, the two best options.
Careful with your words.
And just great options, a lot of great amenities. But they were able to open that, and we were down there having breakfast, and we just coincidentally ran into our largest tenant, one of the employees of the largest tenant in our building, and they were just saying how much they love the food, and they were here yesterday and can't wait to come back. And it's really showing us that bringing this level of hospitality, which Adam and his partner are really experts in, I mean, unbelievably skilled, and I'm learning a lot from what they're doing. But if you want to talk more about our future plans to amenitize the building and how tenants are actually reacting to that.
Sure. Yeah. I think to answer your question, I think we feel that there's a huge opportunity in office buildings. Like if you go into, as an example, if you go into, you know, you read all these headlines saying office is dead, nobody wants to come to work. You go into most office buildings, even well-located class office buildings, there you understand why nobody wants to go there. They have these lobbies that were, you know, that are dated. They have at best mediocre food, and you're sort of going daily into an airport, mm-hmm. as opposed to something, you know, you go into a hotel, which is something sort of, I think, explains our thesis, where it's more hospitality based. Amenity is a great word, but the core thesis is really hospitality. So our thought was, you know, you go into a Rosewood Hotel or a One Hotel or wherever you might choose, that's $300 to $600 a night, and the bellman, the
wait a minute, where are you getting a Rosewood Hotel?
Okay, 800, 1,000, whatever it is.
I mean, still, you haven't traveled recently, Ruben.
We put all our money into office.
I stayed at a Courtyard by Marriott for NMHC last week in San Diego, and I spent like $700.
Right, there you go. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, conference pricing aside. Okay. No, but my point is that you go into a hotel, you spend $800 a night, whatever the number is, and the bellman, the valet, the concierge, the waiter in the cafe know your name. You pick up the phone, you call room service. Hello, Mr. Kirsch. You walk into an office building, you pay $1 million in rent. Nobody knows who you are. You forget your badge. Nobody says good morning. Forget your badge. You have to go through some security office and so that you've never met anyone. And we thought that that's a huge opportunity to make people happy. So to make people want to come to work and to help our tenants bring their employees to work.
That's one thing to do that in a 100 room hotel, 200 room hotel.
Right.
You have 1,000,002 square feet.
See,
here.
So I'm going to give you the counter to that.
Yeah.
In a hotel, you were kind of responsible for every room every day.
True. Right? And you have different.
In an office building, yeah. We have a gym, we have a valet area, and we have a lobby. And now we have a restaurant. So we have a pretty finite area that we just need to dominate. And we think that listening to the tenants and what really not only knowing them, but listening to their feedback. Like, for example, we did polls. We were choosing coffee, what coffee to serve in the cafe. We did a poll. You guys want Starbucks, La Colombe, Blue Bottle, whatever you want. Tell us what you want. We did a poll, so 75%.
Can we say which one?
La Colombe. La Colombe is the one that won.
I'm not a coffee drinker, so I wouldn't.
It's a Philadelphia.
La Colombe is a great. And coffee. Matcha.
Wow.
Yeah, and we have our own brand of Cha Cha Matcha. So another big piece of feedback we got, everybody loves the gym, which is great. The one thing that was missing is everybody wanted this is huge craze around saunas and ice baths. Mm-hmm. So that's,
that's coming.
Priority one, sauna, ice bath.
How about a cryo chamber?
Cryo chamber.
No, the cold plunge gets the job done.
Yeah. Okay.
So we think that engaging the tenants and making them feel like, for a lot of these people, this is like their second home. They're spending 40, 50 hours a week here. And even by the best landlords in the country, they may have amenities, but they're not really, there's no hospitality aspect of it.
So you guys are really differentiating yourselves in the office space. How do you get the word out that the Aon Center is providing these types of amenities compared to your peer buildings in downtown LA?
So great question. And I would say part of that answer is with actually accepting interviews with such notable people such as yourself. This podcast I've actually been a regular listener to.
So you're the one.
I know. It's a growing. I may have started as one of a few, but it's grown and it's really highly respected.
I appreciate it.
And your listeners are the exact people that we want to reach. So I would say thank you to you for giving us such a wonderful, professional, respected platform to share these messages that we're trying to get out. So that'd be part one. Part two is Colliers, who not only does the leasing, as I mentioned before, they also are our property manager, and they have a robust marketing department. And working with all these lines of business at Colliers, it's really a synergistic, almost like symphony of pieces working together, and they're helping to get the message out. We've actually worked with BizNow. We're going to be hosting a big BizNow event here. And between the leasing team, between our network and everything else, that's one way or one group of ways. And then another way is ultimately not really telling people. It's really showing our tenants how much we care, how much we love them. We're doing free coffees certain mornings. We're doing in our soft opening, we gave away free samples of our restaurant food. We're offering discounted prices and just epic quality for that. We're going to be improving the gym, as Adam Rubin had mentioned. We're going to be adding all these amenities. And really, they're already talking about it. We're having well over 120 customers a day, and we've been open 3 days. So we've had almost 400 customers that are in our lobby. They're interacting with our security staff, who's been trained to smile and acknowledge people. That's a big difference.
No, I'll tell you, you're right. I go into a lot of office buildings, whether it's Century City or downtown, and my experience from the valet to the front lobby staff to coming up here, besides interacting with you guys, have been really pleasant. That was a joke. You were supposed to laugh.
Right.
including you guys. No, it has really been, because sometimes it can take 10, 15 minutes just to get through security of a lobby.
And it's not a fun experience. It's high friction.
It's professional, but it's not.
Yeah. So let's get into a couple nuts and bolts, and then I want to find out, you know, what and talk about what's next for you guys. But what is currently the occupancy of the Aon Center, if you are comfortable talking about that?
Sure. We're approximately 64% occupied. Mm-hmm. And was there a second part to your question?
Well, how does that compare to the rest of downtown? And then I guess part three is, what would you consider a success story? You're at 64%. Sure. What do you want to get it to? And so I guess first question is, how does that compare to the downtown of your, you know, comp set?
So our comp set is skewed because there's a lot of buildings in receivership and foreclosure. And if you can believe this, when a borrower or principal is intending to give back the keys, they can sometimes, there can be a period of limbo in which the asset isn't receiving the attention and love that it deserves. Mm-hmm. And sometimes this has actually happened. I won't point to specific buildings, but the property can not even be listed for rent. And so tenants can sit there and call the owner, who's effectively virtually given up the management and ownership of the building for in favor of the lender. They can call, not get calls back, not know who to talk to about leasing. Even if they get a hold of someone, who's paying for the tenant improvements for that? Who's paying the brokerage commission? There's lots of different costs. There's even risks involved. Well, what happens if it doesn't work out? All the tenants leave. How will the building remain an ongoing concern? So for instance, at the 865 South Figueroa, their largest tenant just vacated, and that was the TCW company. They relocated. They were in, I think, approximately 245,000 feet.
Wow.
And they relocated to another building in downtown LA. That calls into question, you know, that's an 800,000 foot building. They were never 100% leased. And so that was rent coming in that was going to pay for security staff, amenities if they wanted to invest in those, utilities, elevator repair, maintenance. It's very expensive to run a building, let alone exceptionally well with amenities. And so there's some actual concerns. Will it maintain as an ongoing concern? So the occupancy is, I believe, really hard to judge in this vacuum we're in right now. But I would answer your question, because I'm not trying to avoid it. I would answer it by saying, historically, occupancy, you would say you're a successful building at approximately 80%. That would be a marker for success. Mm-hmm. So we're at 64%. I would say if we're able to achieve even a historical average of occupancy, I think that would be a success, especially given the market today. And we, of course, with the Colliers partnership, hope to overachieve that target.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that getting from 64 to 80%, will it be attracting current downtown LA tenants to have them relocate from other buildings? Or do you think it's also possible that you will find tenants who aren't currently in downtown who want to come back because they're seeing it as maybe a more affordable option? They're seeing the regrowth of downtown LA. They're seeing that it is getting cleaned up. So come back now. Don't wait, because in a couple of years, it's going to get more expensive. Right. Like, what is your plan?
So Ruben and I were talking about that earlier, and we were comparing, first off, the geography of downtown LA is intrinsically a value proposition in and of itself. You're surrounded by freeways. It is allows your C-suite executives to experience a reverse commute. So you get to come from the west side to downtown. Ruben came to downtown, experienced very little traffic.
Yeah.
It took me
a half an hour from the Palisades, which is the furthest,
as far as west you can be.
Next is Malibu, not even LA. Yeah.
30 minutes at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
Door to door. And the traffic going the other way.
Hour and a half, 2 hours. Yeah. So part of this intrinsic draw to downtown LA is you have, in addition to all the restaurants, everything, but you have the reverse commute for the C-suite potentially. You have the, it's surrounded by freeways. So you've got the 5, you've got the 110, which accesses Pasadena. You've got at Glendale and the Valley, you've got the 10 freeway, and you've got all these, the 101, it's all here. And so you have this hub that is accessible to so many things. So that's, and then you also have MTA, and all of the public transit options. So you're really amenitized relative to travel and transportation. So that's part one. Mm-hmm. Then you got part two. Not many people know this, but the largest concentration of government employees in the United States outside of Washington, D.C. is downtown LA.
Wow.
And that's an interesting fact. And that is an intrinsic benefit of being here.
Across local, state, and federal government.
Local, state, and federal. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you got the courthouses, you've got federal, state, local, city hall. I mean, you got it all. It's quite robust. And what that is that there's a lot of companies that do business with the government. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of companies, law firms, et cetera, that actually try cases or utilize the court system for various filings, et cetera. There's quite a robust amount, you know, permits and applications. Gensler's down here. Why is that? You know, the Department of Building Safety, Planning Department, it is all here. And so if you want to be an efficient group that does any interaction with the government, this is the right place to be. This is the correct place to be.
Yeah.
And so that would be value proposition number two. Then there's what you spoke of, which is the actual cost value proposition. Some people focus on that. And that would be the rents in Century City, which is a wonderful market. A little harder to get to if you're coming anywhere from the east.
No, it's 15, 20 minutes just to get to the freeway.
Yeah, from yeah. And the whole not reverse commute, the actual commute during rush hour. And so Century City, we've looked at pricing there. There, we represent a value proposition at current in-place rents of over 50% of a reduction in cost to occupying here. And if you're paying, $1 million a year in rent or $2 million a year in rent, which is possible for some of our, mid-sized tenants,
sure.
Larger ones pay even more. You're looking at saving $100,000 to $200,000 a month. That becomes compelling as well. That can go to additional salaries, more employees, more productivity, et cetera. So,
yeah, are you, what is your level of concern, if any, of the office environment for tenants of scaling down, right, in terms of a 3-day work week? Law firms and other tenants trying to become more efficient mm-hmm. with their space. They have 20,000 feet. When the lease renews, they only need 10,000 feet. So how is that dynamic? How have you played that dynamic into your calculations and thesis, knowing that you have 1.2 million square feet and you want to go from 64% to 80%,
right.
And there may be pre-existing tenants who want to downsize.
Right.
Because, by the way, I'm one of those tenants who has too much square footage right now.
Right. Want to take that one?
I think you should take that one.
Sure. So relative to basically the question, as I understand it, is tenants are downsizing.
Yes.
How do you grow the occupancy of your building in a when demand is getting less?
When tenants
are downsizing. Need,
when tenants downsizing. Need for space. They're downsizing. I guess that's a more efficient way to say a long-winded question.
Well said. So basically, we think there's two ways to get there in that downsizing environment. Way number one is we think that their tenants will have a flight to quality. As buildings either get emptied via the exit of large tenants and they're potentially unable to remain an ongoing concern mm-hmm. and possibly actually should pursue the residential conversion path. A wonderful path. Housing's needed. It satisfies, the government appears to be taking housing seriously and supporting, lessening the red tape to get to those things. We also need places for people to live. So that's a wonderful thing. And a lot of these buildings present well for conversion to residential. They're well located. They're walkable. They have amazing views and they're well built. So we think in the supply and demand.
The supply is going to come
the
down.
Supply may possibly go down faster mm-hmm. than demand is going down. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, there's a major tenant in the market that's going from 107,000 feet down to 80,000 feet. They are looking at our building as one of, and we made the finalist list. It's down to us and two others. They are still a major occupier. So while while demand is diminishing or being reduced a little, you could have potentially supply reduced even further via the argument I mentioned. And that then presents buildings like ours that are remaining as an office use and reinvesting in the space, we can possibly outcompete, or not outcompete, that would be just, we would be among an ever limited amount of supply for the demand. Mm-hmm. The second argument would be the flight to quality, which I mentioned, which is if we keep reinvesting in our business plan of amenities and tenant experience, making it a place where the work-life balance is, you know, you're at home and you're with your family and stuff. And if we make this building experience so great that someone working at home multiple days a week might actually appreciate escaping home to the oasis of the office, we may actually compete that way. Because if tenants are given a choice between, as Ruben mentioned earlier, an airport experience, high security, almost TSA-like experience, that, you know, take your shoes off, what, you know, never seen before, then, and we have this hospitality-focused experience, they may say, oh, we'd like to lease office in your building, as opposed to the cookie-cutter option to the alternative.
Yeah, understood.
I think the floor plates also, the fact that we have 20,000-foot floor plates allows for a lot more tenants. If, you know, if you're downsizing to 20,000 feet, you get a full floor here.
Right.
A lot better on the load factor.
All right, let's end on this. So you guys purchased Aon Center, gorgeous building. By the way, I feel like in Die Hard when the rendering of Nakatomi Plaza
right. And
All Century City was here.
We'd love to have that building. what a movie. Christmas movie, by the way.
Yes. Kids still haven't seen that. A little too young for Die Hard. What's next? Right, what's next for Carol Wood, for your partnership, for L&R?
Sure. A lot more office buildings. I think that's what's next. I think we really feel that we have a great team. We have a great legal team, great legal support. We feel that we're adding a lot of value to office, that we're sort of really getting to know it better, and we have an edge, and we have capital partners behind us. We have the right lenders, and our goal is to have 6 to 10 million feet in 12 months. That's our goal.
And what do you see as, I don't know, the largest, the competition to get that 6 to 10, did you say 6 to 10 million feet or 6 to 10 buildings?
6 to 10 million feet.
Okay.
Hopefully that's 6 buildings.
Yeah. So the institutional world is not,
they're not interested.
Whatsoever,
right.
So who's your competition to get that 6 to 10 million feet?
It's basically just private buyers, private families, private syndicates. That's really the only competition. There's no institutions playing at all.
Sure.
I mean, you've heard, I'm sure, there's a few funds out there that have raised some money, you know, in some cases $1 billion+, but it seems like we're pretty much, it's thin air.
Well, the fact that you guys had an unbelievable execution on this acquisition, which in this market goes a long way, to take down 1.2 million square feet in an environment that the capital markets have resisted not going into office, that you're able to have the financing, to have the operational know-how to run and own and operate a building of not just this size, but really this is a very historically significant building in the downtown LA skyline, right? And infrastructure of downtown. So it's as a born and bred Los Angelino, I think, are you, both you guys born and bred here?
Northern California, but a Californian.
Okay, fair enough. That this is, I mean, one of the treasures of California real estate and in fact, all of the United States. So I just want to thank you for having the trust in me and in working with you guys. It was really an honor. And just congratulations on being able to execute on this acquisition.
So thank you, Kirsch. We couldn't have done it without you. We're very excited about the deal. We're very excited about the office market in general. It's a very exciting time to be a buyer of office. Thank you for having us on the podcast. This was a surprise pleasure.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
as a longtime listener, I am honored to be on this podcast. So thank you very much. And also, your representation of us was amazing. Highly recommend anyone listening who hasn't experienced your services. White glove, just the great value. And you really handheld us through to the end through a very complicated process. And I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to doing many more deals with you and to achieving that 10 million square foot mark within the next 12 months. And if anyone can do it, it's our group, and appreciate it.
Well, it takes a village. It was a team effort. And I know there are folks on the team that aren't on the podcast. We only have room for two. like you guys said, if anyone can take down 10 million square feet in this market, it's you guys. So thank you for coming on. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Kirsch.
You've been listening to Real Talk, Real Estate Discussions with Andrew Kirsch. You can catch prior episodes at scholarkirsch.com and on YouTube, LinkedIn, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and more. Thank you for your positive reviews, comments, and for sharing the show with others.